Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast lead over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
I believe that would be my cue to go. Thank you very much. We do welcome you back inside the playbook. It's Thursday. It's game week 16. It's the Arizona Cardinals, and it's supposed to be cold and snowy. Yeah!
Love it.
Can't wait. John Rook with Eric Scalavino from PFW right here with you on a Thursday. And, yeah, you know what? I'm kind of fired up about
my
this.
My favorite time of the year, John, for many reasons, one of which is the weather. I love it when we can get snow on around Christmas time and playoff time. Football in the snow is nothing. There's nothing like football.
I'm kind of fired up about this, Eric. I have to admit, we didn't have a snow game last year.
No.
So, you know, this would be the first one.
Jets
in,
game.
What, it snowed last year? Not really.
We had a huge snowstorm the morning of.
It was wet.
Really?
It actually was cold rain.
Yeah, remember the fans throwing up snow after Kelly Washington blocked that punt?
Yeah, there might have been remnants of snow, but it wasn't snowing during the game.
Yeah. I want snow during the game. I want like we had
like 03.
Yeah, like 03.
It was
04 when we had the blizzard and the fans would throw the snow up to Gary Glitter's rock and roll and all that stuff. Yeah, I like that was, now that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Where you had to actually dig your way into your seat at Gillette Stadium.
Oakland, New England.
Yeah. That kind of snow
where you can't see the ground.
Right.
It's all white.
Now, allegedly, we're supposed to have a big storm through here starting tomorrow.
Right.
Let it snow.
You're damn right.
That's what I'm saying. Tomorrow. And then we're supposed to be able to dig out, and then it's supposed to come back again Sunday.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
That's what the forecast
says. We're actually trying to come in early and finish the paper tomorrow.
Probably a smart idea.
You remember last year, around this time, we had a snowstorm that started around 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody left home at the same time, and there were no plows out on the road, and everybody was stuck, and it took you like 8 hours to get what would normally take you 45 minutes.
I remember that
we're going to try to avoid that this year.
That's a good idea. I remember the last time we had the big snow, they were even letting people out through the vaunted
emergency exit,
just the one that they let only the privileged people go through because there was just no other way to get people out that
day. Oh, boy, what a mess.
Otherwise, we'd probably still be stuck over there right now. 3 years later.
Don't want to relive that.
No. So anyway, I'm actually kind of fired up about that. And frankly, I think that plays into the Patriots' hands.
They're undefeated lifetime.
You guys just talked about that, and I was going to bring that up as well. I'm listening, to ESPN, and I'm listening to the guys on EEI today for a little while, and they're all talking about how, this is really not a very good matchup for the Patriots. And frankly, I don't disagree. I don't think they match up defensively with Arizona's offense. I think the other way around, though, is almost equally as bad. But fact is that Arizona, number one, they're 0-4 coming east this year, right?
Yeah, the West Coast teams have only won
one game. Right.
So
San Francisco and the Jets, right.
Yeah.
So they have not won coming east, number one. Number two, they're not a good bad weather team. That offense is kind of like it was when Kurt Warner was with the Rams. It's predicated on, optimum conditions, closed conditions. It's going to be nasty. So I think that will even things out when it comes to trying to defend those big receivers.
They might have even gotten a little bit more help, the Patriots. I don't know if you happen to see, I think it was both Arizona area papers, the Republic and the Tucson Citizen, both reported about there was a storm, not a snowstorm, but a storm that, actually there was snow in Las Vegas.
So snow in Vegas, right.
That storm was supposed to pass over where the Cardinals practice. And it somehow miraculously cleared up just in time for them to practice yesterday. And Ken Wisenhunt, the head coach, was talking about that. He was saying, we were expecting that to come through. We thought that might have helped us a little bit in our preparations. But all of a sudden, we get out on the field and the sky's clear. Can you believe that?
I don't know what to say. Is that an omen?
I think it is.
We didn't want them to prep for the snow in New England or that they have clear skies sailing, throughout. Who knows?
No, I think it's the former.
I hope you're right. I do believe, though, that that the matchup, while it looks to be, I mean, when you look at it on paper, they just don't match up. I mean, this could be a 38-35 type of game under optimum conditions. But I don't think the conditions are going to be anywhere close to optimum. Granted, they'll be, you know, the playing conditions will probably be decent depending upon how much precipitation actually falls during the game. If it's, you know, falling during the game, which it could be, making it sloppy, then whichever team is going to be able to run the ball and, you know, has the short passing game and can just grind it out a little bit, that's the team that's going to win. I don't believe that that's going to be Arizona at this stage of the game.
Yeah, although, you know, you tend to assume that if it's bad weather, the score is going to be lower. But I seem to recall, like, some of those lake effect snow games, like in Cleveland in particular, Cleveland-Pittsburgh, Cleveland-Tennessee, there was some really heavy snowfall in recent years. There are games there in Cleveland and maybe even in Buffalo, and the scores were actually pretty high. So it was just the opposite. It sort of helped the offense because the defense was on their heels and couldn't really do much. So I
guess that's two ways to. I guess that's a different way to look at it. I would agree with you if I thought that this was the Patriots and the Jets, or the Patriots and the Bills.
Or two teams that are used to that.
Two teams who are used to it. I would say that there's no reason to think that it still won't be a high-scoring game. But when you have one team that's not used to it, I mean, do I think the Patriots will rout the Cardinals? No, not really. But I think I would be much more surprised if it were the other way around. I'd be less surprised if the Patriots did, you know, the beating, because they're used to playing in this. As you already pointed out, they're undefeated in snow games, and the Cardinals haven't even won coming east, much less one in snow that I know of, unless, of course, that was back their time in St. Louis.
I doubt it. Yeah. I doubt it.
So there you go. That's what I'm kind of looking forward to. So it'll be fun. And Fred's right. I mean, they're going to know, obviously, on Sunday whether or not they have a shot at the wild card, to be quite honest with you, because if Baltimore loses at Dallas, as we've talked about throughout the course of this week already, Baltimore loses to Dallas on Saturday night, then the door is open for the Patriots to get in as the wild card, and it won't matter what happens between the Jets and the Dolphins. The Patriots can still get in. Now, I think that you still want to root the way that you hope to root, because I think you'd much rather have a home game, you know, as, you know, potentially the 3 seed in the playoffs, rather than have to go in as the road team and a 6 seed through the wild card door, which is probably what would happen if you go the wild card route. But you know what? I mean, like I said, beggars can't be choosers this stage of the game. You've played well enough to be in this position now. Now it's time to finish the deal and find a way to clinch it. And so whichever way you can get in is the way you want to get in.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. You got to just try to get in, first of all.
Right.
But, you know, it comes down to they just have to win out. Patriots have to win out.
Got
to
win two. It's conceivable, I think, mathematically, if they lost on Sunday, they'd still have a mathematical chance to get in.
Yes, and you know, I apologize. But I was supposed to look that up for you, and I've neglected to.
Well, here's the only thing I really discovered. That only can happen if Baltimore loses at Dallas. If Baltimore loses at Dallas, then the Patriots could still lose Sunday and mathematically get in with a win and another Baltimore loss to Jacksonville.
Okay.
That's how it would happen. Baltimore would have to lose twice, which would make them 9-7. And the Patriots would sneak in at 10-6 with the 6th spot. That's I believe, how it works. Now, I guess, though, it also means that either the Jets or the Dolphins would also both have to lose.
Well, I was going to say, the Jets are going to Seattle.
Right. So if they lose that one, then I think we'd have to root for Miami to beat the Jets.
In Week 17.
In Week 17. Miami would be division champ. Patriots would be the wild card. Jets would be out. I think that's the only way it can happen, if the Patriots lose Sunday.
Yeah.
Because they lose the tiebreaker
with
both Miami and New York here in this particular instance because of conference record and divisional record in one case.
Right.
So if the Jets would have to lose, and then they would have to lose again. Or Miami has to lose this weekend, and they would have to lose again to the Jets.
Yeah. One of those teams has to lose 2 games.
That's correct. That is correct. So it would still be in play if Baltimore loses Saturday.
Or they tie.
You know what? I mean, I realize that we did have a tie in the NFL this year for the first time in, what, 6 years? And it ain't happening.
Imagine if it did, though.
It could. You know, I guess it could. You know, that would really enter into some interesting strategy, would it not? Knowing that, you know, hey, a loss is going to kill us. But a tie opens the door. In that instance, you don't play for the win, do you? I mean, honestly,
do you play for the win? You always play for the win, of course.
Get out! No, 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 wait a second. No, no, no. If you have a chance and you know going in, all right, that a tie helps you, but that a loss hurts you.
The win would help more.
Not necessarily. A win keeps you alive, but the tie could end up being the day. I realize it would be a really fluky thing to have happen.
I would never want to play for anything but a win.
Even if potentially you go for the win, you fail, you lose, and you miss out on the postseason?
Oh, are you talking about like at the end, like going for a two-point conversion or something?
Yeah. Or
hello, yeah. You play to win the game.
No, I don't think so in this instance. I don't. I think if you know that a tie gets you in, but you know you go for two or something like that, and a loss keeps you out.
I guess I'm going with the mentality that if you're backdooring into the playoffs by trying to get in with a tie, you don't deserve to be in.
If you have the mentality of wanting to win, I think money talks and that kind of stuff walks. I mean, if you got a chance to play in the playoffs, you got to take it. You got to go. That's what it's all about. It's not about the regular season, Eric. It's about the playoffs.
But that's what I mean.
Playoffs.
If you don't have that mentality, that killer instinct mentality going
Normally I agree with you, but I realize it would. You know, I don't even know if what I'm spouting off about here has a anything but an infinitesimal mathematical chance.
Oh, it is possible.
Well, then in that regard, I think I would play it safe and go for the tie rather than go for the win and risk losing.
It's tough. It's a tough one because I would never want to knowingly not go for a win.
Well, that's a philosophical question, and most everybody says, "Oh no, you got to play to win. You got to play to win." But it's not the first time in professional sports. It would be the first time in professional sports that teams talk about "quote unquote" tanking it. And I'm not saying the Patriots would tank it, but I'm just saying that you would give less than a full effort.
Perfect example.
In order to gain in the long term and lose in the short term.
I forget which bowl it was, a couple of years ago, Boise State, Oklahoma.
Yep.
When they pulled the Statue of Liberty. That was on a two-point conversion, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, yeah.
They played for the win. They could have tied and tried to go.
But Boise State, I mean, come on, that's a different scenario. Boise State had nothing to lose. They had everything to gain. They would have been lauded had they tried and lost anyway because nobody expected them to beat Oklahoma, and yet they did, didn't they, strippers? Boise freaking State!
My point is, I didn't need to bring up that feud. Really,
thank you.
I didn't.
Thank you for setting me up for that,
but,
by the way.
I knew you were going to go down that road, but
45-35, baby.
Don't you have much more respect for Boise State for having the stones to go for it?
I think that I don't know that I would say much more. I think what I would say is that I admire their ability, but frankly, I can't imagine anybody not doing the same thing if they were in Boise State's position. Because, like I said, they would have been patted on the back and said, "Hey, great try!" Had they lost, and had they gone for it in the form and fashion they did. Now, if the play had blown up and say Oklahoma recovered a fumble or returned it the other way for a score or what have you, then I think they could have been derided for it. It's like, what the hell were you thinking?
All right, so would you?
They don't belong in the big time. What are they doing in the BCS? Stupid decision like that.
Would you have more respect for a team that went for it and failed trying to get into the playoffs, going for the win, or would you have less respect for a team that tied and got in didn't really deserve it?
That's a great question, and the only way that I can answer that is saying it. I'd have to look at the individual case of the team involved. Is it a team that traditionally isn't a playoff power, or is it a team that's been there every year?
I think more often than not, I would tend to have more respect for the team that tries and fails than for the team that doesn't.
You know what? I think most everybody would feel like that. But I also think that, let's say a team hadn't ever been to the playoffs, or a team hadn't been in the playoffs in like 10 years or whatever, and they know that they have a chance to clinch a bid by kicking an extra point as opposed to going for two in that instance. Frankly, I wouldn't blame them to tie because it's all about getting into the postseason. There are only 12 teams in the NFL that get to go to postseason play. That's why the NFL is the best sport going, because not everybody makes it. It's not like the NHL or the NBA or God, it's certainly, everybody loves, the field of 64 in college basketball because there's 340 Division I teams. But when you take 64 out of 340, that ain't much either. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Pardon me. You know what? I shouldn't say ain't. My English teacher would roll over in her grave. That isn't the same either.
You're from Texas.
Well, every once in a while, you know, I get going a little bit, and some of the slang reappears. It's just the way it is. Damn it. You know? By the way, I was reading, you know, Sammy Baugh, by the way, his obituary.
Yes.
Who passed
Sammy
away yesterday. And he used to pepper his phrases with what they termed mild obscenities throughout.
Uh-huh.
You know, everything was, you know, those damn things, or, you know, or hell, I'd do this, or, you know. He never really said the big bad bombs, you know, but mm-hmm. it was always a damn or a hell or a, you know.
That's harmless.
Yeah. But that's just the kind of the guy he was. He was what we call an old cuss.
Oh, yeah.
He was an old cuss figuratively and literally, because he did it in just about everything he said or did. I had the opportunity to meet, and I'm going off on a tangent again.
That's all right.
Eric, I do this with you. I don't know if it's just you or what. But I had an opportunity to actually interview him back in about 19... God, when was this? Well, I was right out of college. So it would have been 1982, about 26 or so years ago. Does that sound right? Yeah, 26 years ago. So he would have been... God,
so 68 or so?
Yeah, he would have been about 68 years old, late 60s. And he was ornery then. But I swear.
He was ornery when he was 28.
But I would swear that the guy, you know, he didn't want to throw a football or anything like that. We were doing a story for the TV station I worked at the time, because he had actually started his high school career in Temple, Texas, where I was.
Uh-huh.
That was the reason for doing the story.
Yeah.
He actually ended up moving his family to Sweetwater, which is more in West Texas. And Sweetwater is what made him famous, and that's how he got to go to TCU and blah, 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 and the rest, as they say, is history. So he was back through Temple, and it was for Texas Sports Hall of Fame. That's what it was. And even though he didn't even come to any of the other Hall of Fame things, but he did, I believe, come to that one. I believe that was the reason why he was there. And so we wanted to get him to throw a football. He wouldn't do it. And it wasn't because he, you know, couldn't physically do it or accurate. He's just like, no, I gave that up a long time ago. I, you know, when I walked off the field in 52, I haven't thrown a football since.
Wow.
I'm not throwing it again. And that was just how he was.
And you couldn't convince him.
And basically he said, I ain't throwing that damn football, is what he's saying. You know, couldn't convince him. You know, and so I thought, God, you know, he's kind of an ass. But at the same time, though, you know, he's an historic ass. And, you know, I appreciated it. And, you know,
career numbers are up on the screen right now.
Yeah, it's up on ESPN, too. But slinging Sammy Baugh, he was so far ahead of his time. Can you imagine him in the spread formation?
Huh.
You know, and the West Coast offense of today?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, he'd throw for 500 yards.
It's funny to watch these old clips, too. ESPN is showing highlights of him in his playing days and how the quarterbacks used to throw the ball back then.
Well,
it was more like a baseball windup.
Yeah, well, he was a baseball player now, and that's how he got his nickname, because of his slinging the ball almost sidearm fashion from third and short over to first. He actually went to TCU. People don't know this. He went to TCU on a baseball scholarship.
Didn't know that.
Yes, he did. And he was allowed to, quote-unquote, dabble in football.
And he was he also punted, according to this.
He holds the record for single season average in the NFL.
51.4
yards per
wow.
kick. That was back in 1940.
Wow.
Nobody has come close to that.
Well, Donnie Jones of I think it's the Dolphins.
Was that what did it say?
50.
Was it 50 yards a kick?
Yeah.
He kicked 50 yards an average? What year was that?
This year. Oh, wait.
Donnie Jones is kicking for 50?
That's what they had up this year.
Get out of here.
Seriously? That's what was just up on the screen.
That's amazing. If that's true, that's amazing.
And Shane Leckler of Oakland was, I think last year, was like a
49. See, I was going to say that I thought, you know, maybe someone like Ray Guy might have gotten close to that. But apparently not. Well, that's amazing then. Kudos to those guys, because that's unbelievable. I had no idea that his average was that high. You know, I figured Leckler had something in the high 40s, but nobody's averaged 50 since Baugh, and he was at 51.4.
Yeah.
So that's pretty amazing. But he had an unbelievable triumvirate that year, triple crown, if you will. He led the league in passing in 1940.
Mm-hmm.
Led the league in passing. He led the league in interceptions, and he led the league. And I'm talking about picking passes off. He played two ways.
Defensive back.
Defensive.
Yeah.
He led the league in interceptions, and he led the league in punting.
It's pretty good. Now.
In 1940.
Back when a lot of guys played.
Oh, you had
multiple
to play two
positions.
Ways. Well, pro rosters back then were only in the 20s, I think. You only had like 24, 25 players. That's it? Yeah, that's all you had back in the 1940s.
Wow.
That's it. There weren't many guys. So you had to play two ways.
I just thought they did it because they just weren't specializing. Nope. I know they didn't carry 53,
You didn't have numbers. Guys had to play two ways. That's the way it works. You know, we didn't get toward the modern-day numbers in football until the 60s. And even then, that's when the roster started to bloat.
Yep.
And then, of course, we pared it back, in the 80s to where it is now?
Yeah, it's undergone a little bit of flux with the practice squad, and it was up to...
Didn't it used to be in the 60s that, you know, training camps would have like 100 guys
more? Oh, yeah. Even like in the 70s or early 80s, there were that many.
Yeah.
I remember when I was talking to Andre Tippett this past summer when he went inducted into the Hall of Fame, and he was talking about how back in when he came in, which was the mid-80s,
mm-hmm.
there were like 100 rookies invited early, like a week or two before camp. 100 rookies would come in. And they would pare that number down, and then there'd be the veterans. So you're talking like a couple hundred guys at each training camp. That's
easily.
That's a lot.
Yeah,
that's and a lot. Now it's down to 80, which is, you know, just some
right.
coaches don't even know if that's enough.
No.
It might be too much in some cases.
Some coaches, yeah, I certainly would think that they would make an argument that that's not enough, but interesting. All right, so what tangent we got off on Sammy Ball. What were we talking about?
We're talking about the Cardinals and the – bad weather, and somehow we ended
bad
up with
weather. How do we get to Sammy Ball from that? I don't get that. Maybe it's because I saw him on the screen. I don't know. Anyway, so I guess then, we were talking about playoffs, and we were talking about ties and all that stuff, and how that would
going
get
for
in.
The win.
Yeah, yeah, going for the win, so to speak. Right. And it's an interesting scenario. Hopefully, it's not one that we have to revisit, you know, next week. But certainly Tuesday, we're going to know. We're going to know exactly what's in front. In fact, the Patriots may clinch a spot, conceivably, one way or the other, if, again, Baltimore loses on Saturday.
And if New England should lose to Arizona,
we'll also know. New England loses and Baltimore wins,
that's pretty much over.
Forget about it.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen.
No. Unless, of course, the Jets and Miami both lose. Then there's that chance.
That's true. If Baltimore loses or Baltimore wins and the Patriots lose, then the Jets and the Dolphins would both have to lose to keep it in play.
Yeah.
Because then
it would come down to week 17.
It would come down to week 17.
New England would have to beat Buffalo. The Jets and Miami would have to beat each other. One of them would have to win.
Well, but they'd still end up having a game lead, though. No, they wouldn't.
Baltimore would have to lose.
No, they wouldn't. They can't get in. They can't get in. If they lose, the only way they get in is through Baltimore. If Baltimore wins, the Jets and Miami would have no effect whatsoever on the last week.
Even if they both lose,
you've got three teams at 9-6. If they both lose, three teams at 9-6.
Didn't New England have a tiebreaker with one of those teams?
No. They lost. They do not have the tiebreaker with either the Jets or the Dolphins. Jets because of divisional record. Dolphins because
what's
of
their divisional
conference
record?
The Jets are a half game lead because they won, so they're actually a full game lead. They're a game ahead of the Patriots because they just beat Buffalo.
But if the Dolphins lose, they might have a tiebreaker because the Dolphins will lose to an AFC team while the Patriots will lose to an
AFC
team.
Good point. Thank you, Dan. All right, so if that's the case, then. All right, you know what? I got the damn thing right here in front of me. I actually did the research. So here, hold on. Give me a second to look it up here.
That's from today's press room? Where you got those?
This is from – Russell sent this to me.
Oh, he did?
Yes, he did. I asked him about it, and he said, here, this is the latest.
Okay.
All right, AFC. He doesn't have the possibilities here. He just has what's already been clinched.
Dan, well, can you check Russell... NFL.com? I think they have the NFL – playoff possibility.
Yeah. We'll do that. All right, here we go. Indianapolis. No, I don't care about them. I care about the Patriots. All right. Too many possibilities. I'm sure. All right. Let me see. Is that the scenario here? Nope. All right. He just sent me what's already done. Basically, is what. So
we can find scenarios though.
Well, just kind of think through the process though. All right, because let's say they all three lose. Patriots, Jets, Dolphins lose.
I'm pretty sure.
So you're 9-6.
If they're all 9-6.
All right. If that's the case, then. The first tiebreaker is divisional record.
Mm-hmm.
All right, first tiebreaker is divisional record, and the Jets would still have a game lead on the Patriots.
Jets have only one division loss?
Yes. That's true. Only one division loss.
And New England has two?
Yes. Okay, so that's that. So the next tiebreaker, and but they have the same division record as Miami. So then, if with Miami, you would go to conference record as the next tiebreaker.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Miami did have the lead, but if Miami lost this weekend, then I believe they would have the same tie in the conference. So then it goes to common opponents.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yep.
So then you have to take a look at the combined records of the common opponents that they played, mm-hmm. and I believe that would be the tiebreaker with Miami.
And New England would have it?
I think a slight advantage.
I think so. So that means if all three AFC teams lose and the Miami Dolphins beat the Jets next week, we would win the division.
We would still win the division.
So that was the scenario that Paul and I seemed to have come up with yesterday.
Okay. That you guys were talking about. So that's how you could do it.
That's how they
would
have to
do it. If all three teams lost this weekend, they're not dead. Well, let's put it this way. The Patriots lost, they're not dead. But they would still need Miami and New York to lose.
Yep.
Okay, because if they both lose, then you got to root for Miami to beat New York, and the Patriots would have to beat Buffalo, and you could still get in as the division champ based on a tiebreaker, the 1-2-3rd tiebreaker.
Yeah.
Actually, 4th tiebreaker, because head-to-head's first.
Head-to-head's first, right.
So it would be the 4th tiebreaker to win the division at 10-6. Dang!
Makes your head hurt.
God! That was like pulling teeth. Okay, so that's how they could do it, because of the common opponents, record of common opponents. They would be tied head-to-head. They would be tied in the division. They would be tied in the conference. So then you go to record common opponents, and I believe the Patriots have like a one-game or something advantage, and that's it.
Actually, if two teams are tied to break a division tie,
okay,
common games comes before a conference record.
Really?
Oh.
Common games before? Thank you for the clarification.
And
so in that case, then, it's the 3rd tiebreaker.
They have the NFC West.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Uh-huh.
And do they have, who else, Dan? AFC West?
Yes. Yeah.
The two
NFC
West,
and
the
AFC
Western,
West.
The two
Correct.
Western
NFC and
divisions?
AFC West. That's right. That's right. Absolutely right.
And New England lost to San Diego.
Well, we can figure that out real quick. I just hit take,
That's
take
it.
A second
I think
here.
They
the
lost
Jets are 0-3 out West this year.
Yeah. And New England is 3-1 out West. And they beat the Broncos. They beat Kansas City. New England's in pretty good shape there.
Yeah, so they would be okay. So I think you'd still need Miami to win it, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and you would need the Jets to lose to Seattle this weekend.
Jets would have to lose. Miami would have to lose. And then you'd need Miami to beat the Jets. And the Patriots could get in as a division
as
winner
division
at
10-6. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the only way it could happen, though.
Crazy scenario, but
it's crazy.
It's a scenario.
But it is a scenario. So it could happen. Suffice it to say, just win.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yep.
And if Baltimore does lose at Dallas and you win Sunday, you control your destiny.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You win, you're in.
Yep.
One way or the other, you're in. All you have to do is win that last week and you're in. In fact, you know, you control your destiny if Baltimore loses. You control your destiny over the last 2 weeks. Win the two games, you're in.
Mm-hmm.
It's that simple.
Yep.
One way or the other, as a wild card or a champ, you're in. So, you know, how can you not root for Dallas to be Baltimore? I know it may kill a lot of people to root for the Cowboys, but that's how it works. That's how it works in the game. All right. Webradio at Patriots.com. If your brain hurts as much as mine right now, let me know. Coming up here in about 15 minutes, Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN. He will join us on the program. You know, I would, you know, normally on Thursdays we ask for predictions, but people aren't into that anymore, so I'm going to stop asking for them. You can certainly give it if you want to, but frankly, you know, most everybody picks the Patriots to win. Nobody really goes out on a limb and says they're going to lose. I don't even know. This year, the Patriots have lost 5 games. I think I've had maybe one email that says the Patriots are going to lose this week.
Really?
So I've kind of thought that that's pointless now because, you know, everybody here is a Patriots homer for the most part.
Isn't that how it should be?
Well, yeah.
Isn't that what you would expect?
I really would kind of expect that. I mean, we do try to, you know, resemble some sort of impartiality here just because by nature we're journalists.
Yeah.
You know, we're broadcasters or writers or what have you, and we do have to be somewhat objective, even though our employer is the Pro Football Team.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to admit, they do allow us to be objective. So, you know, we're obviously, you know, they allow us great latitude in order to say, hey, you know, a spade's a spade. Or, you know, if play sucked, a play sucked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're able to do that. And what I think that does is obviously allows us, you know, credibility in terms of what our reporting would be on a particular issue or a game or a play or a player or what have you.
But from the fans, I'm saying.
But from the fans' perspective, no, I understand. This is a, you know, it's a rah-rah room is what it is, and I get that. So
we actually have a guy who's a Colts fan. Writes in
regular listener, yeah,
because
yeah.
He says their version of it is atrocious.
Yep,
they've got these former players who.
Well, we've gotten I've gotten several emails in the past from Colts fans, from Charger fans, a couple from Jets fans. I used to get one. I haven't heard from him this year, but I used to get one from a Cowboy fan who lived down in South Texas. Dolphins fans, you know. So you know, that's pretty good. I think it's great that we get other fans. Other teams' fans to actually listen in because, hey, we're sitting here and we're talking about, you know, the NFL, you know, every, you know, weekday basically here on this website, mm-hmm. which is actually pretty cool. And we don't have the restrictions, basically, we don't even have the restrictions that they even have on satellite radio, much less terrestrial radio, which is also kind of cool. I mean, we're not going to go out and blast and, you know, throw F-bombs at you or anything, but.
You might, John. You've been known to slip up sometimes.
You know,
you're getting into your Sammy Ball mode. You never know what you're going to say.
Yeah, Fred has a tendency to rub off on people the wrong way like that. But, you know, I'll let Fred set the standard for that.
Andy's made a few of those mistakes.
I think it's sitting in that chair, by the way, across the way. Yeah. I think anybody that sits in that chair is susceptible to, you know,
prone
outbursts.
To profanity?
Yeah, prone to profanity. Yeah, I think I would have to agree with that. That is, of course, the chair where, you know, the... word of the day, the urban word of the day, urban dictionary word of the day originated.
That's right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So.
that gives you some perspective.
Right. Did we have today's urban dictionary word of the day?
Did we have one?
Did we have one?
That was before I got on.
Arizona speed bump.
Oh.
Arizona speed bump. Is that anything akin to, wait a second. Is that any akin to, what was the phrase I was looking for?
It's probably in with the pile of papers right there.
Is it? Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, let me see. Hold on. Here it is. Found it. I'm not going to repeat that. Well, that's funny.
That's good.
Oh, jeez. Oh, my God. Wow.
Yeah. You're just going to have to download the podcast for that one because I'm not repeating it. Oh, man.
I have to log on because we don't really give the definition either. We
no.
just give the word.
Yeah.
We let people do the legwork.
Yeah.
No, Andy gave the definition.
Oh, he did?
All right. You're going to have to download the podcast then. Oh, that's pretty good, actually. Oh, man. What was it? All of a sudden, I'm suffering from CRS today. Pardon me. It was a phrase, and I think it was largely when, you know, you were in college or when you were in your 20s where you would, you know, slump buster. You know what a slump buster is?
No.
You know what a slump buster is?
I don't think I
know. Dan, you know what a slump buster is? This probably should be a word of the day.
Is it a Texas thing?
Slump buster. Well, not necessarily, but this is actually prevalent in pro baseball. And I've known a few professional football teams to have slump busters.
Oh, I think I know what you mean.
Would you like to take a stab at it? Take a stab at it. You know what a slump buster is?
Yeah, if you're in a slump and mm-hmm. you need to get out of it, mm-hmm. you go find the ugliest, gnarliest, nastiest, and take care of business.
Conjugal relations.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
How is that supposed to help?
I don't know. Probably because you feel like you did somebody a favor. I don't know. I don't know.
Believe me, I don't know.
Like I said, it was a baseball thing, and I learned
that.
Hair gel? Yeah, pretty much. That's phrase, and that phraseology was imparted upon me back in the 1980s by some minor league baseball players that I knew.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got into the NBA. They all knew about slump busters. In fact, a lot of them had slump busters waiting for them on the road, which was scary.
Wow.
I'm not kidding you. I told you, I could tell you stories that would curl your nose hairs about, you know, traveling in the NBA back in the 80s. And then it's amazing people are still alive, honestly.
Really?
It's amazing people are still alive. Yeah, absolutely. So it kind of migrated there. And then when I did games in the USFL back in the 80s as well, that's when I knew that, you know, at the time that, you know, if you could call that pro football, it was pro football. Mm. There are some guys there that also, you know, engaged in slump busting.
Wow.
So, yeah. There you go. Now you know.
I'm better for it, I guess.
I personally have never needed a slump buster. I've never been in a slump, so I don't know.
Plus, you're too kind.
Absolutely. You would. I wouldn't do that. It's kind of like, that's not for me. I don't think so. But that was a widely talked about practice amongst professional athletes 20, 25 years ago.
Dan's trying to find himself one now.
He's looking for a slump buster?
Yeah.
Okay.
Next topic.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. All right, so son of a gun. I saw all of a sudden just kind of ran out of steam here with this one. We've looked at the playoff scenario. I think we've pretty much kind of examined what the Patriots need to do and where they need to be. Oh, I know one thing I wanted to mention. Obviously, Ellis Hobbs was named AFC Special Teams Player of the Week for his kickoff return performance. We were talking about this a little bit, I think this on Tuesday's show, but frankly, I think most people are giving Ellis Hobbs credit for having a better year, or not as bad a year as some perceived him to have had. And I think maybe it's because he's brought down by the whole malaise around the secondary. Mm-hmm. But I think he's generally thought of in a better light simply because of his special teams prowess. Would you agree or disagree?
I don't know if that has much to do with how he's perceived overall. Overall, yeah, they look at him as a great special teams guy and a great returner. But I think he's played well enough on defense that has been what has changed people's opinions somewhat. Mm-hmm. I think he's had the most consistent year of any of the defensive backs. He's played every game.
Well, I would also agree with that, I think. Yeah, most consistent year. It hasn't been a great year.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't been Pro Bowl caliber. Passes. No.
No, but I mean, you know, he's
stayed healthy.
He's been burned less often.
Yeah, and I would say I don't even remember him getting really burned badly in too many games.
I think there were a couple,
but not egregiously. I mean, I remember.
Why does the Miami game here stand out?
I specifically remember the Delta O'Neal getting burned on particular plays.
That's true. That's true. Right.
I can certainly recall.
Well, he's been benched now for Wilhite, has he not?
Yeah.
In fact,
pretty much. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Wilhite has started the last couple of games.
Right.
O'Neal has come in and...
He's still playing. But he hasn't started.
No. But, no, I think Hobbs has, you know, with all of the people who've gotten hurt this year, Hobbs has sort of been the rock in that secondary. And it's funny because at the beginning of the season in training camp, he was coming off the two surgeries of those two different injuries he had last year. I believe he had a shoulder and a groin injury. And, you know, the question around him was, can he stay healthy? And if he does, he might have to be the rock in that secondary. And you know what? It turned out that he was.
You know, Baxter!
You got him? Russell, how are you today?
Oh, hello there. How are you?
Wonderful.
Russell, how are you, buddy?
Doing great. We were actually just talking about Ellis Hobbs and the Patriots, and he was named Special Teams Player of the Week in the AFC, but we were trying to surmise, even though that it's been roughly, let's see. Well, what was it? We were talking about, basically because of the season that he's had special teams wise, whether or not people thought he's had a decent year otherwise as well. And I guess we're just trying to figure out and talk this thing through that he hasn't had a bad year as a defensive back, just not a great year.
No, and I mean, and listen, the Patriots secondary went through massive overhaul in this offseason. There have been a lot of changes. I mean, that's the way you can get to them. As a team, the pass rush for them isn't necessarily overpowering, which always hurts. And then when you make as many wholesale changes as they did in the secondary and along the way lose a veteran like Rodney Harrison, everybody's going to suffer. I mean, a DB is, I want to say it's only as good as the pass rush, but you know as well as anyone else. They all got to work in unison.
Right.
You manage to get a good pass rush, and get some really good cover guys to go with it. And that's when you have defense like actually you're seeing in Pittsburgh right now.
Right.
The aspect about the Steelers, everybody talks about their pass rush and so on. The thing that can't be underestimated about the Pittsburgh Steelers defense this year is they are covering receivers much better than they ever have. You know as well as anyone, Tom Brady could light them up. Asked about Deion Branch in the 2004 AFC Championship game. you could burn the Steelers if you could pass protect. I don't know if that's necessarily the case anymore, and I think that on the opposite end, that's kind of what's happening with the Patriots.
Yeah, okay. I would agree with that. Hey, I know your time is short, so let me hit on a couple of games if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
Obviously, tonight's game, Indianapolis at Jacksonville, I'll hit that only because the Colts are going through an unbelievable run right now. Is there any reason to believe that they don't run the table and end up 12-4 and for them anyway, clinch the 5 seed in the playoffs?
Well, it's hard to believe they don't. I mean, you know, Jacksonville showed a little life last week and beating Green Bay, but, I mean, for the most part, I think you would have to rate them, the Packers and the Chargers, as the most disappointing teams in the league this year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Indy's doing it not flashy. I mean, they're not a numbers team this year. How many years have we seen them, you know, roll up big numbers and so on? I mean, Peyton Manning is doing just enough. I mean, they've still had a battered offensive line. They've still had Bob Sanders in and out of the lineup. Marvin Harrison's not playing tonight, but... You know, they're getting good play just from overall. You know, you remember as well as anyone, John, all the injuries they went through on defense last year and mm-hmm. still managed to keep their defense together. A lot of those young guys who got on-the-job training this year are now coming to the forefront this season. And they're just a well-rounded team. And I think the thing that people were surprised about when they were 3-4, how used did we get to them being, in 2005, they were 13-0.
Yeah.
In 2006, they were 9-0, won the Super Bowl. Last year, of course, they were 7-0, and then got knocked off by the Patriots. This year, they're doing it on the back end. And the one, you know, just as we have talked about in the past, were the Patriots ever capable of winning 20 games in a row? Yes.
Right.
Why? Because they had done it before. And that's what you see with the Colts. At
right.
any one time, I think they're always capable of rolling off a long winning streak.
The Saturday night game is the game that we've been buzzing about around here for obvious reasons. Certainly, if Dallas beats Baltimore.
Did you say buzzing as in Ravens or?
Buzzing as in.
Buzzing.
Buzzing.
Okay.
Not buzzing.
I thought that was a little buzzword play.
No, no. Well,
okay.
It was a weak effort if it was, but I didn't really.
Oh, okay.
It, so.
Okay. Like buzzard. Yeah,
right, exactly.
But, okay.
Boy,
did I go a long way for
it. You did kind of reach.
Comment.
Yeah, you did kind of reach for that.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
But if the Cowboys win, then the Patriots. As a wild card, that door opens up.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And listen, I think Baltimore's going to have their hands full. Everybody is talking about Tennessee's defense, Baltimore's defense, Pittsburgh's defense, all rightfully so. I don't think anybody's been paying attention to what Dallas has done as of late on the defensive side of the ball. Three or more sacks, six straight games. Sacks aren't everything, I understand that. They have 53 sacks all of a sudden. They've held their last five opponents, I believe, under 100 yards rushing. They're getting a lot of takeaways. You know, it all kind of coincides with Wade Phillips having a more active role on the defense as of late. And, you know, Joe Flacco and the Ravens couldn't get in the end zone last week. Last game at Texas Stadium for what worth you put in there. You know,
true.
I think Dallas is on a little bit more of a roll than people think. They did a demolition job on the shorthanded New York Giants last week. You know, did not give up a touchdown at all. You know, in fact, they were so generous that they let Tony Romo score 2 points for the Giants. But they had 8 sacks in that game last week. You know, I think Dallas has got a little momentum going. Now, whether it's going to be enough to get in the playoffs when it's all said and done, I'm not sure. But I think they're about to deal Baltimore a real death blow here.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I do like the Cowboys in that one, and it's not just because it helps the Patriots. I just think Dallas is playing pretty well, playing much better defensively.
Dallas is the better team right now,
yeah,
John,
right
to be
now.
Honest
yeah.
with you. I mean, you got a young – listen, Joe Flacco has played magnificent football, okay? But when he's gone against some of the better defenses in the league, he's lost to the Steelers twice. They lost to the Giants. They lost to the Colts, who can give a team fits. And they lost to Tennessee. So when that Ravens team has run into some of the better defensive units and pass rushes in the league, they have not fared well, and I think the Cowboys are right now in that role.
All right, the two games, of course, the other two games that affect the Patriots would be the other two divisional rivals with which they are tied in the East, Miami playing at Kansas City, and obviously the Jets playing at Seattle, and certainly looking at it on paper, you'd have to think that the Jets at Seattle may be the better opportunity for a slip-up.
Yeah, you would think so. I mean, much has been made about the Jets going out on the West Coast this year and stinking it up. They lost to the Raiders. They lost to the Niners. Although the Niners are playing pretty good football right now. They lost to the Chargers early in the season. You know, I mean, a lot. You know, Mike Holmgren, Brett Favre together one more time, we think. We don't know. You know, I agree with you, John. If there's a slip-up coming, it's the Jets who have not played. I mean, they have really taken – it's mystifying to me. It kind of reminds me of Dallas last year after they beat the Packers and kind of losing their edge.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since the Jets beat the Patriots and the Titans in those back-to-back weeks, they've not been the same football team. And last week, I think Marshawn Lynch had about 123 yards rushing and 122 came after contact.
Why did they not hand the ball off to him on that
play? I'm not sure. Because, and I'll tell you why.
Unbelievable.
I mean, we can all second guess as much as you want, but I'll tell you one thing. What mystified me about the call was this. If you watched the game, and I'm sure you did, you saw big chunks of it.
Yeah.
When I said that 123 and 122 thing, my reference was to the Jets tackling, which was absolutely horrible last week.
Right.
Horrible. I mean, you know, Fred Jackson got a touchdown for the Bills. He literally drug the Jets 7 yards into the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
Even if there was no hole for Marshawn Lynch, he was getting yards. And that's why I didn't understand why he decided to put the ball in the air. They were winning the line. I mean, the Bills wound up with 187 yards on the ground. That's how you beat the Jets. Chris Jenkins, you know, I don't know if he's losing a little steam. He doesn't seem like he's been the factor he was even a month ago and so on. They gave the Jets an opportunity to make a play, and the Jets did it. So I give the Jets credit for that. But, the Jets are going to have to play much better on defense if they're going to win this game. I mean, Seattle has struggled. It'll be met. I mean, Seneca Wallace once again as well. But there's some – I mean, the Jets are not coming down the stretch here with a lot of momentum. But somehow I'm guessing they're going to find a way to win. As for Miami, I mean, what a story. And I'll tell you what's the amazing story about them. We are now 14 games into the season, and they still have only turned over the ball 10 times.
That is amazing. Yeah, that is
amazing. Well, I'll tell you how amazing it is. The NFL record for turnovers in a season by a team is 12. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's by the 1982 Kansas City Chiefs. What makes that interesting is the Chiefs did that in a 9-game season. It was the strike season. There have been 3 teams that have turned it over 14 times in various seasons. The last team was, of course, I think we mentioned it last week, Bill Parcells' 1990 Giants. What a correlation there.
Mm-hmm.
But they have done 10 turnovers in 14 games. That's absolutely – in fact, they have won – they have scored 16 or fewer points the last 3 games, Sean, and they've won them all.
Wow.
Because they're not making mistakes.
Right. Well, that's a credit to them. So you believe then if both Miami and New York win this week that the only way the Patriots get in is through the wild card?
I think they'll be sending – well, I don't know if Bill Parcells and I don't know if Robert Kraft will be sending anything to Dallas as far as, some token of affection and so on. I think the Baltimore route's probably the way to go. I just think Baltimore is going to have a real, real tough time with the Dallas defense. And, of course, New England has to take care of business with Arizona, who has been a mystery act, to say the least.
Yeah, very true. And we were talking about that earlier, Eric and I, and frankly, because it's forecast to be, not only snow tomorrow, but also snow again on Sunday. That's going to only help the Patriots in their matchup with those big physical receivers that Arizona has. I mean, under optimum conditions, there's no way that I would like the Patriots' defensive matchup against Kurt Warner and those guys. There's no way. However, I would also feel the same way about the Patriots matching up against Arizona's defense for the most part, based on what we've seen thus far, especially against Eastern teams. I just believe that the weather, if it is nasty like they say it's going to be, is going to equalize it a little bit more and put it in the Patriots' favor.
Well, I'll give you more of an equalizer. The Arizona Cardinals, John, last week played in perfect conditions at home and got whacked by the Minnesota Vikings.
This is true.
That should tell you something. How's this for a number? The Arizona Cardinals in their last 6 games have run for 276 yards.
6 games, 276 total.
That's 46 a game.
Wow. Okay.
276. Now, we just saw the Tennessee Titans on Thanksgiving Day run for 290-something at Detroit.
That's right.
No balance on that team. They
the
can
Patriots,
talk all they want.
The Patriots ran for 277 last week.
Yeah. How's that?
Yeah, in 1 week.
Okay. I mean, that is just absolutely astounding. If that's the kind of football you think is going to win, you know, they now have the worst rushing attack in the league, but they have the second best passing attack, so I guess that's balance. You're not going to expect to come into conditions in Foxborough, even if they were ideal conditions, and beat a defense like New England's just by simply throwing the ball all over the place. It's not going
to
happen.
Yeah, well, that's certainly, I think, reason to kind of stack the deck, at least in the Patriots' favor, although, you know, as we all know, anything can happen. One of the games that I wanted to touch on quickly, Russell, was the battle of the Titans, so to speak, for the top seed in the AFC as Pittsburgh goes to play Tennessee. Pittsburgh, to me, is playing the best football in the entire NFL right now. Do they go to Tennessee and get this win, you think?
Well, I think it's going to be tougher than you think. I mean, because there's a lot being made out of Haynesworth not being there and probably Vanden Bosch being out. And, of course, Vickerson, who's one of their key backup defensive tackles, is out due to a suspension and so on. The way to exploit Tennessee is via the run that way. But Pittsburgh doesn't run like that. To me, the battle was more Pittsburgh's run defense, which has shown a few cracks as of late. Mm-hmm. New England got some, you know, depending on the play calling, New England was managed to get some yards on them, and Baltimore did a little too last week. If Tennessee can run on them, I don't care about the defensive injuries. I think Tennessee will be able to control the football. You know, the Steelers have kind of saved their best for last. They have 11 wins this year, 5 of them in the final 2 minutes are overtime. So if it's a close game at the end, I think Pittsburgh will find a way to win. They've really kind of got this fourth quarter mojo.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know they've got a lot of momentum. I'm not ready to hand this to the Steelers right now. I'm leaning a little toward Tennessee.
The Sunday night game is also a battle for the top seed in the NFC, Carolina playing the Giants.
And literally, because it is going to be the winner is the number one seed. The thing that's interesting is that the loser is not guaranteed the number two seed. Remember, Minnesota beat Carolina earlier this year.
Mm-hmm.
Minnesota finishes with the New York Giants. So, you know, somebody here could go from the number one seed to having to play the first week in an awful hurry. And everything's gone wrong for the Giants the last 2 weeks. 22 points they've scored in the last two games. They scored one offensive touchdown in the last two games. Carolina, 30 or more points. They're on a roll. I like the Giants.
Yep, I kind of like the Giants on that
one,
too.
I'm going to take the Giants. I think they bounce back in a big way here. The one thing I will say about Carolina, even though they are rolling right now, when they have lost this year, they've lost big. They have been certainly erratic, to say the least, even though they're 11-3 team.
Anything special about your Monday night game, Green Bay at Chicago?
Well, these franchises have been around for a while.
You got to give me more than that. Come on. I know you've already worked this.
Listen, you know what's funny is the only team that the Packers, I think, have beaten in the last 6 weeks, or is it 7 weeks, are the Bears. They shellacked them 37-3.
Right.
You know, the Packers have fallen real hard. And the sad thing about there is everybody will point toward Aaron Rodgers, and he's having a dynamite year. Their defense has been terrible. Their running game's been bad. Their offensive line is disappointed. Aaron Rodgers and the special teams have been the hallmark of the Packers. You're not going to win championships just getting contributions from those two units. Although I still wouldn't be surprised if they beat the Bears. It was funny, you know, I don't know if this means anything, but last year the Packers were 13-3.
Mm-hmm.
They lost both games to the Bears and still won the division.
Hmm.
This year, I think the Bears still have an outside shot at winning the division. They're going to need help from Atlanta on Sunday, and that should be a pretty good game as well.
Right.
But, you know, what if the Bears get in the playoffs and wind up losing two to the Packers? I mean, you know, Chicago's offense has its moments, but it doesn't exactly overpower you. I think the Packers are going to snap out of it this week, although it doesn't do them a lot of good because they're mathematically eliminated.
They're done, right, and you mentioned, of course, Atlanta playing at Minnesota, another game that will obviously have big NFC implications. All right, Russell, I know you got to get off, so I appreciate your spending the time. And we're going to meet on Tuesday next week, correct?
Absolutely.
All right, that's beautiful.
I've already put it in my date book.
We're going to cram the whole week into basically one day next week.
Ironic you said that, because the NFL is going to cram all 16 games into next Sunday.
Yeah, how about that?
Yeah, no Saturday, no Thursday, no Monday, no nothing.
Well, they're going to try to give everybody, I guess, a semblance of a holiday weekend, sort of.
Yeah, so a week from Sunday, we're going to see all 16 games. Now, we don't know who's flexing. We don't know what time they're all going to be. There'll be some jockeying for position and so on, depending on what happens this week. But no specials, everything in one Sunday.
Good stuff.
I think they should just play them all back-to-back. I think I'd enjoy that.
That'd be fabulous. Can you imagine?
Yes.
Oh, you'd be bleary-eyed, but boy, what a great deal that would be.
But what a way to go bleary-eyed.
Absolutely. Hey,
beats a keg of beer.
Absolutely. Oh, big time. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Okay, John.
Thank you, Russell. All right, that's Russell Baxter, ESPN's NFL research coordinator. He had to get off to a meeting at the Worldwide Leader, so we wanted to let him go before the top of the hour. As we try to do whatever Russell needs us to do, because he's obviously great with his time. He's very generous, you know, with his not only his time but his knowledge with us and with you. And as I suggested, next week, you know, obviously because it's Christmas week, a little different scenario, a little bit different schedule around these parts because of Christmas Day being 1 week from today. In fact, and because everybody apparently here at Gillette is going to get out by what, noontime on Wednesday, Dan? Pretty much, or 2 o'clock on Wednesday, right? Everybody's leaving by two. About the time for this show to start on Wednesday. So that way Dan and Jason and everybody else, so they don't have to stick around and schlep through me, you know, or schlep for me or anything else like that. What we've decided we'll do is we're going to preempt next Wednesday so they can, you know, be normal like everybody else around here and leave at 2 o'clock next Wednesday for the holiday. And obviously there will be no shows on Christmas Day. So we're going to cram Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, what we normally do inside the playbook, all into Tuesday's show to preview the Buffalo game. So Russell will be a part next Tuesday. I guess B-Lo will also still be a part next Tuesday, we believe. I think Eric is actually going to be a small part next Tuesday as well. And if the game really means something, if we got something on the line here, we should probably check in with someone from Buffalo as well on Tuesday, as you know, it could mean quite a bit. And perhaps even one of the national broadcast folks, because we just don't know what it's going to – we don't know what this weekend's going to bring us. So we will have what is best known as an action-packed show. You won't want to miss a stinking second of it because it'll just blow right by you and you'll miss it. And you don't want to do that. So we're going to set you up for the Buffalo game next week all on Tuesday from 2 to 4 Eastern time. So that'll be a must listen. You know what? I'm actually going to take a break for the first time in a day and a half. Does that work for you? Especially since it's going to be me the rest of the way here. But we got some news and notes to share with you. I would love to hear from you as well on what you feel like the playoff scenario is. Talked a little about this earlier this week, but I'd like to kind of bring it up here in case you're interested in a little interactivity here. Which do you think is the Patriots' most likely route to the playoffs? Or will they not make it at all? Webradio at Patriots.com. Webradio at Patriots.com, or you can choose the telephone, 508-543-7482. That's the number to call. Also love to chit-chat with you about the holidays, anything you got on your mind sports-wise. Are you giving a sports gift? Are you getting a sports gift, to your knowledge, anyway? We'll talk about all kinds of stuff. But, yeah, what do you think is the Patriots' most likely route to the postseason? Love to hear your thoughts on that. If you got some thoughts on the Arizona game or anything else we've talked about, get it done. Webradio at Patriots.com, inside the playbook.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we got to go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
The New England Revolution have the perfect shopping plan to avoid crowded malls and long lines during this hectic holiday season.
Oh, what a save, Reese, again!
This year, get everyone on your list the Revolution Holiday Pack. With the Revolution Holiday Pack, you'll skip the lines and they'll get tickets to four soccer matches of their choice. And they'll get to pick their seats before tickets go on sale to the general public. Plus, they'll receive a limited edition, full-color 2009 Revolution wall calendar featuring their favorite players. We know managing the holiday budget is more important than ever, and that's why the Revolution Holiday Packs start at just $76. We even offer flexible payment plans. You can pay $25 now and the rest in 09. Get your holiday shopping done quickly and easy by ordering the New England Revolution Holiday Pack. Call the Revolution Ticket Office at 1-877-GET-REVS or log on to RevolutionSoccer.net and give them a gift of Revolution Soccer. Pride.
Knockdown, it's loose.
Passion.
And it's in.
Revolution.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Patriots fans, this holiday season, there's more reasons than ever to head to the Patriots Pro Shop at Patriot Place. Not only will you save big, but you could win incredible prizes just for shopping. Enter the ultimate holiday contest, and you might win a VIP game day experience, a tour of the hall at Patriot Place presented by Raytheon, given by a Patriots Hall of Famer, dinner with the head coach, and much more. Plus, get a free Patriots gift with any $50, $100, or $200 purchase at the Patriots Pro Shop at Patriot Place. Can't make it to the stadium? Log on to PatriotsProShop.com and take advantage of the $5 flat rate for shipping on every order, regardless of size or destination. The Patriots Pro Shop at Patriot Place is open year-round, Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. and Sunday from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week on PatriotsProShop.com. Stop in or log on now and enter the ultimate holiday contest at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you're any closer, you'd be in the locker room. In-store promotions not valid on game day. See site for details.
Hour number two, Inside Patriots Playbook for a Thursday. I'm John Rook. Good to visit with Russell Baxter, as we have in the past on Thursday, even though he was off to take care of some family details before the holiday weekend gets ready to get upon us here, and we'll check in with him again on Tuesday. We are going to, in the second hour of the program here, hear the conference calls that the Patriots media had a chance to visit with Cardinals quarterback Kurt Warner and with head coach Ken Whisenhunt from earlier. So we're going to let you listen into those so you get a bit of an idea of the Arizona perspective on coming east again when they have not had any success at all in doing that this year. And obviously with the weather potentially being what it is. And, you know, and as we talked earlier this week with the Cardinals folks, you know, frankly, they're not feeling real good about themselves right now, even at 8-6, and having already clinched the NFC West championship. You know, it's the first championship they've had in over 20 years of any kind since this franchise moved to Arizona from St. Louis. You know, and they got a chance now to host a playoff game for the first time since 1947 when the franchise was in Chicago. That's amazing when you think about it. So while they should be really celebrating, you can, I guess, understand a little bit why they are not, because they played very, very poorly last week in a loss to Minnesota. And since they, you know, got off to the 7-3 start and basically clinched for all practical purposes in the West, they've lost three of their last four. And so now the Cardinals are at a stage where they're just desperate to play good football. They just want to get back to playing good football. They're basically, and have been for the last couple of weeks, playing like a team that's basically locked into that number four playoff spot in the NFC. And the Cardinals know that they're going to have to improve their effort if they're going to be anything but one and done in the playoffs. Now, if the playoffs were to start after last week's games, in other words, if they were starting now, the Cardinals would be matched up in with the Dallas Cowboys in the opening round. And yes, they would get to host Dallas, but does anybody think that the Cowboys wouldn't win that game? Of course not. I think the Cowboys would probably be favored. So in that instance, you know, the Cardinals do have something to play for here. I realize sometimes it seems like we don't think that's the case. They most definitely do. And I have to admit, there's just a little something in the back of my head that frankly, man, I'm just a little uneasy about these guys, and maybe it is because Warner has been somewhat rejuvenated this season. I think it's probably more so because they still got some big, tough receivers. And Arizona is definitely capable. John is calling in from Los Angeles. John, hello. How are you?
Pretty good. What's going on?
How are you doing today?
I'm great.
What's on your mind?
I wanted to call and ask why I know this would be sort of unusual for Arizona.
Yeah.
But I know the Patriots, when we go to play a hot weather team, we do something to simulate those conditions. And I know you can't simulate them in Arizona, but haven't there been times when the Patriots traveled somewhere in advance of the game to at least acclimate a little bit? I think they have.
You know, so I think,
would you consider coming out here, you know, a couple days before the game and, you know, work out at some high school somewhere or some college.
Well, you're talking about Arizona doing that, coming this way, you mean?
Yeah, it's cold. They're not going to be used to it. I don't know why they don't.
Didn't they just have a snowstorm go through the area, go through like Vegas this week?
Yeah, I have a feeling that probably doesn't quite simulate it.
Well, from what I understand, the way that it was, and Eric Scalavino and I were talking about this earlier, that the Cardinals, actually that snowstorm that went through Vegas was supposed to go through the Cardinals training area, but apparently it never made it. It dissipated before it got there. I think that that's been done apparently in the past, but I think nowadays most teams are so ensconced in their routines that even the slightest little change in the routine, even just to get them acclimated to weather, quite frankly, is right. More of a bother than a help. And I think they feel like that it would probably hurt them more than help them. Most teams look at it like, hey, you know what? These guys are professionals. They're going to have to play in all kinds of weather conditions. We have to play in extreme heat, you know, if you're in Arizona. In the Northeast, you know, you're going to play in extreme cold and messy conditions when it gets into December. It's expected. And so, you know, I really don't know. I think we as media, and certainly as fans, I think we tend to put more emphasis on the weather than the players or the coaches really give a, you know, rats you know what about. Be honest with you.
Yeah, I guess so, but they are professionals who have not won a game back east this season.
That's true.
So, I mean, I think it's a really tough, it's obviously a very tough matchup for the Patriots.
Well, you know, when you look at it, and I said this earlier this week, you look at this on paper, yeah, it does not match up well because, you know, I think the Cardinals' offense is a mismatch for the Patriots' defense because they're attacking directly and they have a strength offensively, or the Patriots have a weakness defensively. So
they have arguably three Hall of Famers at quarterback and the two wide receiver spots.
Sure.
And the two wide receivers, they're not only Hall of Famers, they're Hall of Famers smack dab in the middle of their prime. I mean, they are excellent.
Yeah, that's very true. So, and the Patriots, as we all know, they're very susceptible to the middle of the field. They don't, you know, their corners do play off the receivers a little bit more than I think we would all like, and I think it's because they're just trying to get from being beaten deep. But here's the X factor in all this, John. They are expecting sloppy conditions here at best on Sunday, which is certainly going to hurt any kind of timing route that you have. The Patriots are used to this. Keep in mind, the Patriots have never lost when there's snow on the ground. Never.
Right.
So in that regard, the Patriots know this is business as usual, BAU for them, while the Cardinals are going to be like, okay, we got to spend some time adjusting and getting ready for this. And to me, I think the same scenario applies this week as did last week against Oakland. The Patriots are going to need to try to get an advantage on Arizona and force them to have to throw the football in those conditions coming from behind in order to play catch-up. And I do think that could play in New England's favor. Now, if they allow Arizona to hang around in this game, in which Arizona is certainly capable of doing, we've seen it offensively, they can definitely do that, then I think this would be a nail-biter, and Arizona is capable of getting the win. But I think Arizona's going to have to play nearly the perfect football game here under adverse conditions to do that.
Yeah, certainly the conditions favor them. If I'm the Patriots, if I'm Belichick, all week I'm really emphasizing red zone defense, because we can have one of those games where we give up huge chunks of yards, you know, in between the 20s, and I expect to, because that's what we've been doing. I mean, even the PFW guys were saying that Oakland game, Oakland's terrible, and they were wide open over the middle and across the field.
They were. So, well, we saw them score, you know, their two big touchdown plays on plays that ended up going up the middle.
Right. At the same time, I mean, that game, there was a lot of garbage time
Sure.
production from Oakland in that game.
That's true. That's true.
But these days with the Patriots, the way they're playing defense, you can't tell the garbage time from the we're just not very good at defending the pass.
Well, no, I would disagree there only because I don't think the Patriots are good defending the pass.
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying you it's hard to tell the difference.
Oh, I
see.
Whether
it's garbage time or it's just our regular bad pass defense.
Right. Well, I realize that, the Patriots defenders, cornerbacks, are doing all that they can do. It's not that they're not trying. They're trying. I just don't think physically they are able to match up. Some of these guys are probably not ready to be out there as starters. It's a given that the Patriots need some cornerback help, which they'll be looking to. I think will be priority one in the offseason, but that's my own personal opinion, and I'm sure there are some others that share that opinion. They have who they have. And because of that, they're going to do whatever they can to at least be able to make a play. And if it means they have to give up 12 to 15 yards and not let somebody go 25 or 30, I think that's kind of how they've sort of approached this.
Yeah. Well, you'd love to have Wheatley back just for the amount of experience he'd be getting. He's just
no doubt.
Really starting to show a little something, and it would be great to be able to throw Wheatley and Wilhite out and say, you know what, guys, learn, do what you will. This will be great experience for next year.
No doubt. No doubt. I agree with that. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen. But I am grateful, though, that Jonathan Wilhite has sort of supplanted Delta O'Neal. And so now he's been out there starting the last couple of games. And I think that's a step in the right direction. I mean, I always thought, first of all, if the season was ever done and the Patriots were out of the way, that they should put all the young guys out there so they can figure out who the heck can play. But now in this instance, they're playing meaningful time in a game that really means something. And I think that really speeds up the learning curve. If not physically, mentally, it certainly does, because this gives guys confidence in their ability to be able to, clamp down on somebody in crunch time.
And what's the deal with Vince Red? Is he healthy enough to play?
Right off the top of my head, the answer to that is no.
Yeah, I don't think so, because, boy, it would be really fun to see not just Wheatley, but Red, and if Pierre Woods hadn't hurt his jaw, and
we've been seeing a lot of Guyton. Now Guyton obviously got hurt again, so we're not sure yet of his status for Sunday. But we have seen a lot of Guyton. Obviously, Gerard Mayo is going to end up should be Defensive Rookie of the Year. We've seen two or three of the younger guys out there, getting the kind of time where they can now be seasoned veterans, and they're not really rookies anymore. So I think that's a step in the right direction. You just have to hope that somehow, some way, they can manage to stay healthy in the secondary after this year, because this year has just been abysmal in terms of keeping guys healthy.
Yep. So, all right. Well, thanks, John. You're doing a great job just flying solo there.
Thanks. Appreciate it, John. Appreciate your call.
Take it easy.
You bet.
Take care.
Happy holidays. There you go. All right. John in L.A. So bring you up to date on his concerns and the secondary and everything else. The other thing that we didn't bring up right there, we're talking about, tendencies and Arizona coming east and playing in bad weather, and how the Patriots have always played well in bad weather. Keep in mind how overall, since the beginning of 2003, December of 2003, Patriots are 22-2 in the month of December. So traditionally, regardless of weather conditions, whether they're good or they're bad, the Patriots are playing their best football at this time of year. 22-2 in the 12th month of the year. It's pretty good. That's the league's best December record. Over that time period. Best December record. So, let's see. New England, in fact, has won 10 straight games in December back to 2006. So, they can turn it on at this time of year, and they're going to need to do it here, because it certainly could mean potentially getting themselves and maybe even clinching something in terms of the playoffs for this week if the cards break right for them. Pun intended, I suppose. Got some other things we're going to get to, but right now, though, let's see. Speaking of the cards, let's get off to Ken Whisenhunt, who is the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. Obviously, in his first year there at Arizona, had spent several years as an assistant in the league, most notably in Pittsburgh, where he'd been a part of a Super Bowl championship team. He brought, as we had discussed earlier this week, a different sort of mental attitude to Arizona with a few of the assistants that he's brought with him and some of the guys that are on this football team. This is a team, Arizona, that doesn't feel defeated going in as perhaps they used to. And a lot of times a coach's mindset does dictate that. And so this is where I think the Cardinals have turned the corner. I don't know how much longer they can do it for, whether or not this is an extended period of time, because frankly, I think most everybody realizes that the Cardinals have not had the strongest of ownership over the years. Doesn't mean they couldn't be turning the corner, but you just have your doubts until you actually see Arizona do something meaningful on the field. Cardinals are wagering that Ken Whisenhunt is going to lead them to that. And he had a chance to visit with members of Patriots media.
Start us out. I'm sure you've gotten this when you've come east. I mean, curious your thoughts on the whole west to east thing and some of the challenges for teams making that trek.
Well, it's a tough challenge just from the standpoint of the effect on your body and the playing the 1 o'clock games. It's very difficult. So we've done a number of different things and finally settled on leaving Friday afternoon, which gives us a day to acclimate. The last time that we did it this year was against Carolina, and we played the best that we played on the East Coast. So we're hoping that maybe that just our routine and how we do it will help us in this game.
And how much of an adjustment has that been for you as a head coach coming from, you know, the Northeast, basically, I mean, or Pittsburgh, getting used to that whole coming west to east?
Well, you know, I've done it many times going east to west, and it's not as difficult, in my opinion, going that way. So it was very new to me being here in Arizona and having to come back east, and we played a number of games, five this year and three last year. So, you know, it's always going to be something that we're faced with, so you have to find something that you think works that can help you prepare for it. So, you know, like I said, I think we've made progress on that line. It was tough for me just from the standpoint of mentally and physically what it does to you when you get there and having to adjust to the time. And the thing that we found is that a lot of times we started very slowly in those games because we were sluggish starting out. So hopefully coming in a day earlier and acclimating ourselves has helped us.
And I'm not sure the exact record, but I think it might be one win for teams going west to east playing at 1 o'clock. And I was just curious, if you had Roger Goodell's ear, would you sort of say, hey, you know, it might not be a bad rule to say, let's make those 4 o'clock games. That would really sort of even the playing field.
Well, I don't know. You know, there's no real evidence to suggest that anything other than playing at 1 o'clock is tough, but a lot of times that's because some of the teams that we've played this year, I know, playing the NFC East and now playing New England, they're all good football teams. Mm-hmm. That makes it tough. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that's part of it. But, you know, I think that there's nothing that we're going to do that's going to change it. It doesn't help that the 1 o'clock, that it's difficult, but, and that there hasn't been much success. And I think you're right. The only team I think that's won was San Francisco beat Buffalo in a 1 o'clock game. So, you know, we're hoping that we have something that'll work for us and that we play well.
How worrisome is your record recently against these, you know, top teams, the Panthers, the Giants, the Eagles, the Vikings, now the Patriots? Those are games where I guess you could make a big statement and you haven't been able to. Is that a concern for you?
Well, it's not something that we're pleased about, especially two of the games where we didn't play well at all against Philadelphia and then this past week against Minnesota. But I think that's all part of growing up as a team. You know, we're still a work in progress. We're learning about ourselves, and we know that this week's going to be especially tough going into New England and how NFC teams have not fared well against this team. So it's a challenge. You know, we're just hoping that we can improve our play and get in position to play well in the playoffs.
Do you feel that last week's loss was in any way a hangover from winning the division?
I believe it was, yeah, to a degree. I really think that, you know, that's something that we focused on for almost 2 years now, last year being our first year and then this year, and you devote a lot of time and energy and effort into doing that, into winning the division. And then when you actually accomplish that goal, you are faced with a letdown. It was something that I was concerned about last week and mentioned that during the week to the team. And, you know, I felt like you didn't see indications of that in practice, but obviously we didn't play well. And I think that our focus in that game wasn't what it had been in earlier games. So, you know, I think it's very difficult when, especially that we did something that has never been done in Arizona, and that's win the division. You have a number of people that are excited, and rightfully so, telling you you're a good team, patting you on the back, and it's easy to lose your focus. And I think that is what happened to us to a degree. We also played a good team. That didn't help.
Penalties, the Patriots have been, lead the league in fewest, and you're up there near the top for most. What can you do to fix your problem, and how admirable is what the Patriots are accomplishing in that regard?
Well, I use the Patriots as a model for that all the time. I mean, the one thing you can say about their team is that they're very disciplined. They play with technique. They're very sound in what they do, and that's the reason that they're not a penalized team, and that's something that we work on. We're greatly improved this year on our penalty number. Our yardage is way down on our penalty yardage, so we are improving. And even though we may be listed up there near the top, we have improved significantly from last year, and that's something that we're constantly aware of and working on. And it's when you see a team like New England, you know you have, when you were playing against them, you know you have to play well because they don't make mistakes. And the reason that they don't make a lot of mistakes is because they pay attention to the details and they're a very disciplined, well-coached team.
Is the lack of balance on offense something that concerns you? I mean, obviously, with the three receivers you have and Kurt's great year, throwing the ball is a pretty good option. But do you feel like teams are not respecting the running game, defenses are not respecting the running game, and that's maybe compromising what you can do passing-wise?
I don't think so. I think we've been successful throwing the ball, and the reason that we're doing that is because we've won games, and we've been successful scoring points, getting into the red zone, scoring touchdowns, you know, and even our time of possession is above 30. So when you look at all those things, you know, we obviously would like to run the football better than what we have, and that's something that we're going to continue to work on. It's been a number of things as to why we have it, but, you know, I think that the debate is always, can you win throwing the football consistently? And you do expose yourself to potential for turnovers more when you throw the ball, and that's something that up until the last few weeks we haven't been bad with. So, you know, I think that I'm comfortable from the standpoint of if we play well and don't turn the ball over, that we can throw the ball and be successful. But we do certainly want to continue to work on the run, because going into a game like this where there's a potential for the weather to change or not know what to expect, it's always nice to have that as something you can do.
Apart from just being his coach, as a guy who's been around football and you know, knows the game, is this sort of second act of Kurt's career, you know, surprising in any regard? It's not usual that you see a great player have a 5-year dip and then get back to the level that he was once at.
You know, I think it's a credit to Kurt more than anything, and his competitive spirit. I'm not surprised. I'm surprised that he's been as proficient this year, because, you know, not many quarterbacks throw the ball as well as he's thrown it this year with the accuracy and the number of touchdowns. But I'm not surprised on the other level, because he works so hard. I think that being in a competition with Matt where he had to earn this, you know, a 38-year-old quarterback in that position worked the way he did, made him a better player. And I know that he was a good player already, but I think some of the things that we asked him to do as far as ball security, better decisions with some of his throws, those were things that, because of the competition that he worked on, and it has helped him as far as this season has gone. And I'm excited for Kurt, because it's always great to see a guy that people were saying couldn't do it anymore have the season that he's had.
How's Steven Spock working out at tight end?
He's doing a good job for us. He came in at a time where we were really desperate. We were banged up at tight end. We didn't have one healthy guy among three of them. And he came in the first game and, off of a short week, performed very well. He's a competitive young man that does a very nice job of having picked up our system and has fit in very well.
Is your punter situation, I mean, do you feel that Ben Graham sort of stabilized it? Or?
Yeah, I do at this point. He is, you know, it's only been two games, but he does some things for us that I'm very excited about. His plus 50 kicks have been very good, and he's kicked the ball for average very well. You know, obviously it didn't help that we had a punt return for us for a touchdown last week. but I don't think that was as much his fault as it was our coverage team. But just the reason that we made the switch with the punter was because of a game like this, where you're playing a good opponent, where the weather condition, you don't know what to expect, and field position could become such a critical part of it. You know, that aspect of the game, we had not been as good as we needed to be, and hopefully Ben will give us that in this as we go forward.
I know this is for something for down the road, a couple of weeks, but first home playoff game since 1947, that's, I mean, do you ever step back and go, that's staggering that some, that a franchise could go that long without getting a playoff game at home?
Well, I mean, you're aware of it because that's a topic of conversation, and that was certainly, I think, part of why we didn't play well last week, was because everybody wanted to talk about that. But, you know, as far as a coach and trying to prepare for this, I think I learned a lesson from Bill Cowher, and that is not to reflect as you're going through the season. You know, I'm very pleased that we won the division, that we did what we needed to do to win the division, and that we're in the playoffs. And now our focus has got to be on playing better than we did last week, so that we can actually have a chance to win a playoff game. So, you know, I'm happy for the organization because it has been so long that we've done that. But, you know, I think that we need to move on from that and hopefully play better.
How much of a boost would beating the Patriots be, given, you know, your struggles recently against playoff-bound teams? Would this, and obviously you want to win no matter if you're playing whoever this week, but given that it's the Patriots, would that give you a boost more than, say, beating the Rams or the 49ers or somebody?
Well, absolutely. I mean, this is a team that's 9-5 that's leading or tied for the lead with the AFC East, you know, division leader, and we know what a tough opponent they are, and they were in the Super Bowl last year. They were well aware of that because they played in our stadium last year. So I think this is a team that's been very successful. I know from a personal standpoint, they've kicked my butt as a coach a few times. So I recognize what a job Coach Belichick has done and his staff and how well prepared those players are. And I think it would be a great boost for us if we were able to get a win.
How well do you know Coach Belichick?
Well, I've coached against him for a number of years. I mean, I know enough to say hello to Coach Belichick, but I have a tremendous amount of respect for what he's done in New England and how that program has been consistently winning, especially since we lost two championship games to him. You know, that makes it tough.
You going to go old Joey Porter on him here?
No. No.
Okay. What 22 straight games with a touchdown pass for Kurt? I mean, I know that's sort of an odd stat. Does that just speak to his consistency?
I think it does. I think it's, you know, I think we have done a, I think he has some good receivers that have made some plays for him, but I think Kurt has always been a quarterback that's made good decisions, that understands what people are doing to him, that can get the ball out in situations. And I think that when we get to the red zone, we put a lot of burden on Kurt to make decisions. And because of his ability to do all those things I just mentioned, he has had great success down there. So, you know, it's definitely an advantage to us because, and I think that's a reason why we've scored so many touchdowns this year, is because of his ability to make decisions in the red zone.
What are your impressions of the Patriots' defense? They've been hammered by injuries, especially at linebacker. You know, their rankings on third down and red zone are pretty poor.
Yeah, but they're not, their rankings on yards given up are not not bad at all. In fact, they're pretty good from a standpoint of yards in, within a drive. So I think that I think it's what they've done with the number of injuries that they have had is a testament to their players and their coaches, because they're playing very well with what they have, and I know they've had to make a number of changes, and we know as coaches how difficult that can be at times, especially when you lose the type of players that they've lost, when you lose a Rodney Harrison, when Teddy Bruschi doesn't play for you, when you've had your D-line going in and out due to injury. You know, it is it's very difficult, and I see what I see on tape, once again, is a disciplined team that doesn't make a lot of mistakes, and they make you earn everything that you get, and you know, we know that we're going to have to play well in order to be successful offensively.
Last thing, Ken, both teams here have had receivers who've taken huge shots this year. I know maybe not to compare the hit that Wes Welker took with the one Anquan had, but just talk about the resiliency and the tenacity that receivers sometimes have to exhibit when they take shots like that and bounce back up.
Well, I don't know if all receivers can do that. I mean, I think that Anquan and Wes have similar qualities, and that's that they're both very tough, competitive football players that are playing at a very high level, and the competitive nature of that position and actually those individuals is what drives them. And I know that you can see it in the way that Wes plays, and I think you can see it in the way that Anquan plays. They play with no fear, and when you have a situation where you take a big shot like that, you know, as difficult as it may be for the normal guy to bounce back from that, because they're so competitive, because they're so play at such a high level, you know, I think it's one of the reasons why they can come back.
Okay, Ken. Hey, well, thank you very much for taking the time to speak with us. We appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you. Do you think you could get some warm weather for Sunday?
Yeah,
course?
Yeah, we're trying. It's not looking very good, but we'll work.
Yeah, I believe that. Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
all right, so there's Ken Wisenhunt on the conference call earlier with Patriots Media. No way we're giving the guy good weather. No way. Not happening. Getting out to come out and play in the rough stuff, Coach. And if you can beat the Patriots in the rough stuff, then you know what? Maybe you legitimize yourself a little bit. Maybe you deserve to be where you are. Well, you've earned it. But, I mean, you know, hey, I think people would really take the Cardinals seriously if they could come out on the road in bad weather and all and beat the Patriots. To me, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's entirely if that scenario were to happen, then I think you'd have to just say, you know what, maybe these guys aren't all that. See if they can't figure out a way to do that. Obviously, that's not something the Patriots want to have happen, but I still have my doubts as to whether or not it even can happen. This is just the 12th time that the Patriots and the Cardinals have played. First time ever, obviously, at Gillette Stadium. After a 1-6 series start against Arizona, New England has won the last four meetings, so overall they are 5-6 against the Cardinals in the previous 11 games. Last time these two teams played, it would have been on September the 19th of 2004. It was a 23-12 win for the Patriots at Sun Devil Stadium, which is the home of Arizona State, before they built the University of Phoenix Stadium. Patriots have only played the Cardinals one time since Bill Belichick has been the head coach here, and that would have been that game in 2004. Patriots have faced the other 30 NFL teams at least twice over that same stretch of time. So the Cardinals, they know the least about of any team in the NFL coming into this game. Of the 11 previous meetings in the series, only three have ever been played in Foxborough. Interesting. They were played, obviously, when it was St. Louis. They played in Busch Stadium back in the 70s. They played one in Schaefer Stadium in 1981. They played again in Sullivan Stadium in 1984. Then they played three games at Sun Devil Stadium when they moved to Arizona in 1990, 91, and 93. Then they came back again in 96 and played here in Foxborough, the last time they two teams played here. And the Patriots actually shut out the Cardinals 31-0 back on September the 15th of 96. So 12 years ago, a little over 12 years ago, the last time the Cardinals franchise has been in Foxborough, Massachusetts. And then the last two times these teams have played in 99 and in 2004, as we mentioned, both at Sun Devil Stadium, and both again were Patriots wins. The Patriots have won the last four in the series, short as it is, of 11 games overall with the Cardinals franchise, now the Arizona Cardinals. The Patriots, as we have already dictated this year, but it certainly bears repeating here, they have been very successful against NFC teams overall, not only this year, but in recent years. They are 30-5, 30 wins, 5 losses against the NFC since 2001. Obviously, that includes a 3-1 mark in the Super Bowl. In fact, as we talked about 2 weeks ago, when the Patriots played Seattle, Patriots have won 14 straight regular season games now over NFC teams, dating back to 2005. Patriots have not lost a regular season game to a team in the NFC since September 18th of 05. That's when they lost on the road to Carolina, 27-17. And, of course, the Pats 3-0 against the NFC this year. They've beaten San Francisco on the road. They've beaten St. Louis here in Foxborough, and they beat Seattle on the road. And those are their three NFC games thus far, as their division of choice this year in the NFL schedule rotation was the NFC West. So there you go. That's not a whole lot of history between the Patriots and the Cardinals, but what little of it there is has certainly gone the Patriots' way over the last 15 years, four meetings in the last 15 years, and the Patriots have won them all. So that's where we are with the Cardinals, and they become the last of the actually the next to last of the teams in the NFC to actually play a regular season game in Foxborough at Gillette Stadium. The other one is Washington, I believe, is the only other team that has not played a regular season game at Gillette. There have been some preseason, but not regular season games. So, but that's the only NFC team now that has not been here since this stadium has actually been built. Patriots, you know, will also have the benefit, I think, of, you know, the streak, the karma, whatever, going on with them. As we mentioned, you know, the 14 regular season games against the NFC teams that they've won. They've also won 9 straight games against teams in the NFC West. Bet you didn't know that. 9 straight against teams in the NFC West. Last time they lost to a team in the NFC West was November of 2001 here in Foxborough, you recall, when St. Louis won that game 24-17. So 9 straight wins against the NFC West. Okay. See, the streak just gets better and better. There's always all this good stuff that's, you know, they're kind of coming on to here. Got an email here that I wanted to share with you if I can find it. Here it comes. It's Todd in Nova Scotia sends this note, and he says, John, in my opinion, the most likely road the Patriots will travel to the playoffs this year, when we asked that question earlier today. He says, it's Baltimore loses Saturday and we win out, and then we go in as the wild card, and then we'll play either the Jets or Miami. I'm hoping we play Miami because you never know if Favre is going to have a big day. I think we beat Miami easy, and then we go to Tennessee, which doesn't scare me that much because we match up well. And if you stop Chris Johnson, well, you've got a shot. Then it's on to either Pittsburgh or Indianapolis. Pittsburgh would be easier against for a matchup. I'm not saying this is going to happen, but it's certainly a possibility. Well, it's certainly a possibility, Todd, and frankly, it's a very believable scenario. I don't know that Pittsburgh would be easier. I really don't. I think we saw, you know, I don't think the Patriots would be afraid to go to Pittsburgh. That's a given. They would not be afraid to go to Pittsburgh at all. Based on, you know, what the history is there. But seeing Pittsburgh here and knowing the kind of defense they have, they're playing the best defense of anybody in the NFL this year. Patriots would have to be, you know, dead on, no mistake, clicking on all cylinders to have a shot there. And they can move the ball against Indy's defense. I think playing Indy at Indy, the Patriots have already done that this year. Probably should have won that game. I think we all realize that was a game the Patriots should have won. Lost it, what was it, 18-15. I don't think they'd be intimidated either way, but I kind of like their ability to match up with Indy's defense more than I do like their ability to match up with Pittsburgh's defense. And again, that's just, you know, we don't know what will happen. We really don't. Pittsburgh's playing the best football. It doesn't mean that Indianapolis, as the potential 5 seed, wouldn't be in a position to do that. Wouldn't that be something? If Indianapolis gets in as the 5 and the Patriots get in as the 6 and have those two teams meet in the AFC title? Well, man, that would really be something. Frankly, you know, two of the division winners, whether it's the Jets or Miami out of the East, if that's the way it goes, and the Broncos out of the West, there's no way that they should be seated that high, but because they'd be division champs, they're going to end up getting that. Just the way the seeding, you know, process works. All right, let's wrap up the show today then by giving you an opportunity to listen into the conference call. Patriots media had a chance to visit with quarterback Kurt Warner of the Arizona Cardinals. And obviously Kurt Warner is a great story in his own right. I'm sure many of you know his story from his time having spent in St. Louis as the quarterback there and the greatest show on turf and the fact the Patriots managed to win that game in 2001. And I know for a fact in this conference call he talked about how after that game he actually sent Coach Belichick a note congratulating the team on the win, which is a classy thing for him to do. obviously people know that he played in the Arena Football League, and before you know that, he was stocking shelves at a grocery store. I mean, he's a great story. And the fact now that he's come on, you know, over in this decade to having basically what a lot of people think will be eventually a Hall of Fame career, certainly you'd have to say now at the least it's Hall of Fame caliber. I don't know if he gets there, but his numbers are comparable. Whatever the story may be, it's been a great ride for Kurt Warner. And the thing is, it may not yet be over, even after this year. I think there's still some talk whether or not that he could end up coming back again next year, even with Matt Leinart still sort of lying in wait in Arizona. He has been a great story, and he certainly has been a huge factor into Arizona's resurgence and now moving into the playoffs as they are this year out of the NFC West as the division champion. Next week, we'll be back here again on Tuesday, and we're going to cram the whole week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, into one day next Tuesday. So make sure you will hear for Tuesday's playbook because it will be, as they say, action-packed. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel, right? Enjoy the game. Enjoy the snowfall on Sunday. Here's Kurt Warner with the Patriots Media.
Hello.
Hi, Kurt.
Hey, how we doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
Warmer than here, I bet.
I'm hoping not, but I have a funny feeling it's probably true.
You better get ready.
What's that?
You better get ready.
Yeah, we'll be ready. Or I'll be ready. What's the weather like?
Possible snow here.
Snow? Yeah. What temperatures?
20 below.
20 below. All right.
Well, not that bad.
Okay, I really be ready then.
Hey, Kurt, what's the feeling? I mean, you guys have accomplished so many good things this year. It's sort of a breakout year for the franchise, and yet you're coming off the Minnesota loss, which probably wasn't your best performance team-wide. What's just kind of the mood going into this week?
Well, I mean, I think the mood is, you know, there's obviously a little disappointment. And like you said, we've accomplished a lot of good things, you know. But we're still in the process of building this thing and becoming, you know, what we want to become. You know that although we've accomplished things that we haven't accomplished here in a long time, we're not there yet, and we understand that. And you know that, you know, you look at our schedule and the teams that have beat us this year, and you know we played a tough schedule and we played against a lot of good football teams, and unfortunately we haven't beat a lot of the best teams that we've played this year, but I think that's just a sign to us that we've got a ways to go, that we have to continue to improve, and we have to get better, and, you know, we're fortunate to have played as well as we have and won the games that we have and to win our division and be in the playoffs and have all those experiences, but we're not there yet, and we can't ever be satisfied with just winning a division and winning more games than we've won here in the past or accomplishing things that we haven't accomplished in the past. You know, our mindset has to be we want to become the best team in the league, and how can we do that? And when we play against good teams, I think we always get a better sense of where we're at, where we need to improve. And, you know, and that's what I think these, you know, a number of these last few games against, you know, top-quality opponents continues to show us is that, you know, hopefully it'll keep us hungry and humble and let us know that we've got a lot of work to be done to become one of those teams.
Even though they've been kind of racked by injuries, you do consider the Patriots one of those measuring stick teams?
Well, definitely. I mean, you know, the one thing that, you know, you can't account for is the fact that the veteran leadership, the history, the pride that is in that organization, and the fact that, you know, for as long as I can remember, you know, they've had injuries at different spots, and they just continue to believe and they fit somebody in and they expect them to play well and the coaches put them in great positions to win. And so year in and year out, they're always there. You know, they're always around and competitive and, you know, pushing for a title. And I don't think this year's any different, even though they've had some injuries and obviously some key injuries. Guys just continue to step in and they continue to win. And so there's no question that, you know, going out there to their place, in the situation they're in, still fighting for a playoff spot, this is a tremendous measuring stick for us to see where we're at. And, you know, just like so many of these last few games have been. And so here's another one to help get us a little more battle ready for when playoff time comes.
Do you worry at all about doubt creeping in come playoff time? If you were to, you know, if you go into the playoffs without having, you know, beaten one of these measuring stick teams?
I mean, I think you always worry about that. You know, you want to be entering the playoffs, you know, on a high, you know, winning on some kind of a streak with as much confidence as you've had all year. And so, yeah, there's always worry about that when, you know, we get these teams that we've got down the stretch and, you know, we've played some tough and we haven't played some tough. And so, yeah, you definitely worry about, especially with a young team that's never been there before, you worry about, you know, what they're thinking and, you know, what needs to take place for us to be in a position to compete and win and advance in the playoffs. So, yeah, there's definitely a worry about what these last two games are going to mean to us and, you know, how it's going to determine how we play in the playoffs.
Kurt, I know it's been a while, but any similarities between this team and the one that beat you in the Super Bowl when you were with the Rams?
You know, I mean, the one similarity is more the structure of what they do than I would say necessarily players. You know, I haven't really thought about it from a player-to-player standpoint, but, you know, just watching them on film and seeing some of their schemes and some of the things that coach does, yeah, I mean, it, you know, brings back some memories of the times that I played against him, and that includes the Super Bowl and the different things and looks that they give you and how you really have to be ready for anything and be ready to adjust on the move because, you know, you're going to see things that you've never seen before, and you're going to have to be ready to adjust to them. So I think I see similarities there, but I haven't really, you know, pinpointed it from a player-to-player standpoint.
And thinking back to that game, Kurt, did I read correctly that you had actually sent a thank you note, or not really a thank you note, maybe a congratulatory note to Belichick after that game? And if so, I was sort of curious what led you to do that.
Yeah, really just to congratulate them on winning the Super Bowl. I mean, it's a tremendous accomplishment. And, you know, for them coming in and us being the favorites and the things that they had done that year, you know, and since. You know I've sent them a couple things along the way just basically saying, hey, you know, what an accomplishment. And, you know, that Super Bowl I thought was a tremendous accomplishment for their team. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for coach and the players there and what they accomplished in that organization. And, you know, as disappointed as I was, I was still, you know, more about just saying, hey, congratulations, you accomplished something great. You know, enjoy it.
And what else have you sent them along the way? Just mentioning that you've done it more than once. If you remember, it sounds like you might do this to many people, but just curious what else you might have sent them along the way.
Well, I believe I sent him something last year when they went undefeated and basically just, again, congratulated them on a tremendous accomplishment. I mean, something that's unheard of and something that we all know is so hard to do and fun as a football fan and, you know, to watch something like that and to see the greatness that it takes to accomplish that. And so it was just basically just a note to say, again, congratulations for a job well done.
And, Kurt, do you ever get any responses on those?
No. I mean, not usually, and I don't expect them. You know, I mean, there'll be times that, you know, I'm sure I'll run across Coach at some point in time, and we'll talk about it. You know, I remember running into Coach one point in time. I don't know if it was at the Pro Bowl when we were both working out one morning or can't remember exactly where it was, and we sat down and talked a little bit about some of the things that we shared and some of the things that he'd accomplished. You know, so you have opportunities along the way where you touch base and you cross paths, but you know, you don't send those things looking for anything in return. It's just a way for me to say, hey, you know, appreciate what you've accomplished and you know, enjoyed watching it.
And is that because you're just a fan of the game, Kurt?
Yeah, I'm a fan of individuals. I'm friends with a lot of individuals. But, yeah, I'm a fan of the game. And, you know, I love to watch great people do whatever they do great. And, you know, football is one of them. Is that, you know, I love to see greatness. I love to see people accomplish things that people say they can't accomplish or what people don't expect them to accomplish, and just do their job in an excellent way. And, you know, so there's times along the way where I see something and basically just want to recognize somebody's greatness. And so really, not really that big a deal, just something that I like to do to let people know that, whether it's their peers or just a fan, is out there watching and appreciating what they're doing.
What about Matt Cassel and the job that he's done this year? What are your impressions of him?
Amazing. I mean, I think he's done a tremendous job. And I think one of the most tremendous things is not just, you know, the stats or the wins or where they're at this point, but the expectations coming in with that organization and of course, with Tom and the way they played last year and he played last year. And, you know, in light of all that and in the shadow of all that, to be able to handle himself like he has, you know, in so many different ways. I mean, and, you know, obviously just another example is, you know, last week, you know, obviously understanding that he lost his father, I believe, and coming back and playing the way that he did and being the leader that he's become on that team. I mean, so many things to commend him on what he's accomplished this year. And so, you know, I think it's pretty incredible. And, you know, he deserves a tremendous amount of credit, as I know there's a lot of great people in that organization and have helped him along the way. But I believe he deserves a lot of credit and, you know, in the way that he's played this year and the way he's stepped in and has become a leader for that team.
With having Matt Weiner behind you, a guy who your organization has invested a lot in, how much does that push you to be better, or how much has it pushed you to be better over the last couple of years on a daily basis?
Not really at all. I mean, I love Matt and all of that stuff, but I don't think I've worked any harder or tried to be great any more than I was before. You know, I've been in those situations before, and I've always told myself, just do what you do. You know, continue to work, continue to prepare, continue to play and practice the way that you practice, and I let God take care of everything else. And so I like to think that I didn't have any room to work any harder. And so just because there was somebody looking over my shoulder or a young guy drafted by my team didn't push me to do anything that I hadn't done before. I've always pushed myself to want to be great, and I don't think that's ever wavered or it's ever changed, no matter what circumstance I'm in.
How much could you just compare the satisfaction level of this second act of your career here to the first act?
You know, it's tough to compare them. I mean, they're both pretty special. You know, I think the one difference, obviously, you know, the amount of success we had in St. Louis and coming in so quickly and having that success, it was pretty special because there was obviously nobody that even gave me, you know, one bit of a chance to be able to even play at this level and then to play the way that we did and to win the Super Bowl. I mean, it was pretty amazing time, and it was pretty amazing to have it happen so quickly. But what's so special about this time is that, you know, I've been here and I've been a part of this organization for 4 years. And I really started to understand the history of this organization and the culture of this organization. And you could feel it and you could understand in a lot of different areas why the team, you know, had lost for so long. And to see the strides that we've made and to see us beginning to overcome that, that's pretty special. I don't think people out there really understand how much goes into turning a whole organization around and changing the view of the organization and the mentality of an organization. There's a lot of work involved in that. And so I think that's the sweet part of this second time around is not really what I've accomplished, but, you know, being a part of this process of helping to change the culture of an organization, which I know we did in St. Louis, but I wasn't really there long enough to understand that we were the losingest team in the 90s, you know, until we did what we did. I didn't understand that culture, you know, at that time. But here, I think I understand a lot more of it and understand how difficult it is to make that change. And, you know, when we're part of that process, and I've been a part of that process, and it's rewarding because of that.
Is it easier to accept the way Super Bowl 36 went down now that that
no.
didn't?
I can answer that no. Nothing makes it easier to accept. But go ahead. What were you going to say?
Well, I was thinking that, you know, for a couple of years there, it looked like, you know, maybe that was your last hurrah. And now that you've gotten back to the level that you were at before, I was wondering if you perceive that Super Bowl loss any differently than maybe a year or two after it, where you were struggling to get back and even into the starting lineup or stay healthy.
No, not really. That's still probably the one game that I think about more than any others, even the game that I won. You know, it's just one of those things that doesn't come around very often, and it doesn't matter how much you play or how many Super Bowls you play in. Every one is special, and you can never get one back. And, you know, that was one of those situations where obviously we went into the favorites. And, you know, even though we were outplayed that day by New England, we still felt like we were the better team and that we missed an opportunity that doesn't come around very often. I mean, not very many people get to say that they're a two-time Super Bowl champion. You know, not many people get to say that. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't get to say it either. And so it's, you know, one of those things that, It was a great time for us, and it was a tremendous game, and it was fun to play in, but you know, but we still lost, and it's disappointing because of that. That every time you get there, you want to win it, and when you don't, it's disappointing, and it sticks with you.